get-go.
Just want to start today with a trigger warning disclaimer. This podcast contains descriptions of death and drowning. Hi, I'm Katie Carpenter.
I'm Terry Kovanitz.
We apologize for any and all mistakes today as we begin this episode of Titanic Transcripts.
The witness was sworn by the chairman. Please give your full name and address.
Arthur Henry Rostron, Woodville, Victoria Road, Crosby, Liverpool.
What is your business, Captain?
Seaman.
How long have you been engaged in this business?
27 years.
What positions have you filled?
Every rank in the merchant service up to captain.
In what companies or on what lines?
First of all, I was 2 years as a cadet on the training ship Conway in the Mersey, Liverpool, after which I went under sail as an apprentice with Williams and Milligan's ships. I was an apprentice for 3 years, after which I was second mate, after passing my examinations. Then, after getting my mate certificate, I went on as mate on another sailing ship. Then I passed for extra master and joined the Cunard Steamship Company in 1895.
You are now captain of the Carpathia?
I am now captain of the Carpathia Cunard Line.
How long have you been captain of the Carpathia?
My appointment on the Carpathia dates from the 18th of January.
Of this year?
Of this year, yes, sir.
Were you captain of any other vessel?
The whole of last year, from the 1st of January of last year, I was captain of the Pannonia.
Of the same line?
Of the same line. Previous to that, I was captain of several other smaller cargo boats running between Liverpool and the Mediterranean.
What day did you sail with the Carpathia from New York last?
The 11th of April.
And where were you headed?
We were bound for Liverpool, Genoa, Naples, Trieste, and Fiume.
How many passengers did you have on board the Carpathia when you sailed from New York?
That I am not prepared to answer, sir. I could not give you the exact number.
About how many?
151st, 52nd, and about 560 or 575 third. That is approximately.
Your first stop would have been Gibraltar?
Gibraltar, yes, sir.
What time in the day did you leave New York?
At noon on Thursday.
I wish you would tell the committee what occurred after that day as nearly as you can up to the present time.
We backed out from the dock at noon on Thursday. We proceeded down the river, the weather being fine and clear, and we left the pilot at the pilot boat and passed the Ambrose Channel lightship about 2 o'clock p.m. I cannot give you the exact time now because, as a matter of fact, I have not looked at a single date or time of any kind. I have not had the time to do so.
I mean approximately.
From that up to Sunday midnight, we had fine, clear weather, and everything was going on without any trouble of any kind. At 12:35 a.m. on Monday, I was informed of the urgent distress signal from the Titanic.
By whom?
By our wireless operator, and also by the first officer. The wireless operator had taken the message and run with it up to the bridge, and gave it to the first officer who was in charge, with a junior officer with him, and both ran down the ladder to my door and called me. I had only just turned in. It was an urgent distress signal from the Titanic, requiring immediate assistance and giving me his position. The position of the Titanic at the time was 41 degrees 46 seconds north, 51 degrees 14 seconds west. I cannot give you our correct position, but we were then...
Did you give it the hour?
Yes. 12:35. That was our apparent time. I can give you the New York time if you would rather have it.
Yes, please do so.
The New York time at 12:35 was 10:45 p.m. Sunday night. Immediately on getting the message, I gave the order to turn the ship around, and immediately I had given that order, I asked the operator if he was absolutely sure it was a distress signal from the Titanic. I asked him twice.
Just what was that signal?
I did not ask him. He simply told me that he had received a distress signal from the Titanic, requiring immediate assistance, and gave me his position, and he assured me he was absolutely certain of the message. In the meantime, I was dressing, and I picked up our position on my chart. I set a course to pick up the Titanic. The course was north 52 degrees, west true 58 miles from my position. I then sent for the chief engineer. In the meantime, I was dressing and seeing the ship put on her course. The chief engineer came up. I told him to call another watch of stokers and make all possible speed to the Titanic, as she was in trouble. He ran down immediately and told me my orders would be carried out at once. After that, I gave the first officer, who was in charge of the bridge, orders to knock off all work which the men were doing on deck, the watch on deck, and prepare all our lifeboats, take out the spare gear, and have them all ready for turning outboard. Immediately I had done that, I sent for the heads of different departments, the English doctor, the purser, and the chief steward, and they came to my cabin. I then issued my orders. I do not know whether you wish to hear them I do not know whether you care to hear what my orders were exactly.
Yes, sir, we would like to hear them.
As a matter of fact, I have them written down here. We carry an English doctor, an Italian doctor, and a Hungarian doctor. My orders were these. English doctor with assistance to remain in first-class dining room. Italian doctor with assistance to remain in second-class dining room. Hungarian doctor with assistance to remain in third-class dining room. Each doctor to have supplies of restoratives, stimulants, and everything on hand for immediate needs of probable wounded or sick. Purser with assistant purser and chief steward to receive the passengers at different gangways, controlling our own stewards in assisting Titanic passengers to the dining rooms, etc. Also to get Christian and surnames of all survivors as soon as possible to send by wireless. The inspector, steerage stewards, and master at arms to control our own steerage. To control our own steerage passengers and keep them out of the third class dining hall, and to keep them out of the way and off the deck to prevent confusion. Chief steward, that all hands would be called and to have coffee, etc., ready to serve out to all of our crew. Have coffee, tea, soup, etc. in each saloon, blankets in saloons, at the gangways, and some for the boats. To see all rescued, cared for, and immediate wants attended to. My cabin and all officials' cabins to be given up. Smoke rooms, library, etc., dining rooms, would be utilized to accommodate the survivors. All spare berths and steerage to be utilized for Titanic passengers and get our own steerage passengers grouped together. Stewards to be placed in each alleyway to reassure our own passengers should they inquire about noise and getting boats out, etc., or the working of engines. To all, I strictly enjoin the necessity for order, discipline, and quietness, and to avoid all confusion. Chief and first officers, all the hands to be called, get coffee, etc. Prepare and swing out all boats. All gangway doors to be opened. Electric sprays in each gangway and overside. A block with line rope hooked in each gangway. A chair sling at each gangway for getting up sick or wounded. Boatswain's chairs, pilot ladders, and canvas ash bags to be at each gangway. The canvas ash bags for children. I may state that the canvas ash bags were of great assistance in getting the infants and children aboard. Cargo falls with both ends clear, bow lines in the ends, and bights secured along the ship's sides for boat ropes or to help people up. Heaving lines distributed along the ship's side and gaskets handy near gangways for lashing people in chairs, etc. Forward derricks topped and rigged, and steam on winches. Also told off officers of different stations and for different eventualities. Ordered company's rockets to be fired at 2:45 a.m. and every quarter of an hour after to reassure Titanic. This is a copy also of what I'm sending to our own company.
We would like to have you leave a copy of that with the committee if you can.
Yes, sir. I shall do it with pleasure. One more thing. As each official saw everything in readiness, he reported to me personally on the bridge that all my orders were carried out, enumerating the same, and that everything was in readiness. This was at 3:45. That was a quarter of an hour before we got up to the scene of the disaster. The details of this work I left to several officers, and I am glad to say they were most efficiently carried out.
I should judge from what you say that you made 19 and a quarter knots from the time you got the signal of distress from the Titanic until you reached the scene of the wreck or loss?
No. It was 58 miles, and it took us 3.5 hours. From 12:35 to 3:45? No. 3:45 is when they reported to me. I have not got to the time of arrival at the scene of action yet. I stopped my engines at 4 o'clock, and I was then close to the first boat.
Just proceed in your own way.
After interviewing the heads of departments, I went on the bridge and remained there. While I was up there, I made inquiries making sure that my orders were all being carried out and that everything possible was being done. At 2:40, I saw a flare, about half a point on the port bow and immediately took it for granted that it was the Titanic itself. And I remarked that she must still be afloat as I knew we were a long way off and it seemed so high. However, soon after seeing the flare, I made out an iceberg about a point on the port bow to which I had to port to keep well clear of. Knowing that the Titanic had struck ice, of course, I had to take extra care and every precaution to keep clear of anything that might look like ice. Between 2:45 and 4 o'clock, the time I stopped my engines, we were passing icebergs on every side and making them ahead and having to alter our course several times to clear the bergs. At 4 o'clock, I stopped. At 4:10, I got the first boat alongside. Previous to getting the first boat alongside, however, I saw an iceberg close to me right ahead, and I had to starboard to get out of the way. And I picked him up on the weather side of the ship. I had to clear this ice. I am on the scene of action now. This is 4:10 with the first boat alongside.
You are picking up these people now?
Yes.
Please describe that in your own way.
We picked up the first boat, and the boat was in charge of an officer. I saw that he was not under full control of the boat, and the officer sung out to me that he only had one seaman on the boat. So I had to maneuver the ship to get as close to the boat as possible, as I knew well it would be difficult to do the pulling. However, they got alongside, and they got them up all right. By the time we had the first boat's people, it was breaking day, and then I could see the remaining boats all around within an area of about 4 miles. I also saw icebergs all around me. There were about 20 icebergs that would be anywhere from 150 to 200 feet high, and numerous smaller bergs, and also numerous what we call growlers. You would not call them icebergs. They were anywhere from 10 to 12 feet high and 10 to 15 feet long above the water. I maneuvered the ship, and we gradually got all the boats together. We got all the boats alongside and all the people up aboard by 8:30. I was then very close to where the Titanic must have gone down, as there was a lot of hardly wreckage, but small pieces of broken up stuff, nothing in the way of anything large. At 8 o'clock, the Leyland Line steamer California hove up, and we exchanged messages. I gave them the notes by semaphore about the Titanic going down, and that I had got all the passengers from the boats, but we were then not quite sure whether we could account for all the boats. I told them, I think one boat is still accounted for. He then asked if he should search around, and I said, yes, please. It was then 10:50. I just want to go back again a little bit. At 8:30, all the people were on board. I asked for the purser and told him that I wanted to hold the service, a short prayer of thankfulness for those rescued, and a short burial service for those who were lost. I consulted with Mr. Ismay. I ran down for a moment and told him that I wished to do this, and Mr. Ismay left everything in my hands. I then got an Episcopal clergyman, one of our passengers, and asked him if he would do this for me, which he did willingly. While they were holding the service, I was on the bridge, of course, and I maneuvered around the scene of the wreckage. We saw nothing except one body.
Floating?
Floating, sir.
With a life preserver on?
With a life preserver on. That is the only body I saw.
Was it male or female?
Male. It appeared to me to be one of the crew. He was only about 100 yards from the ship. We could see him quite distinctly and saw that he was absolutely dead. He was lying on his side like this, and his head was awash. Of course, he could not possibly have been alive and remain in that position. I did not take him aboard. For one reason, the Titanic's passengers then were knocking about the deck, and I did not want to cause any unnecessary excitement or any more hysteria among them. So I steamed past, trying to get them not to see it. From the boats, we took 3 dead men who had died of exposure.
From the lifeboats?
From the lifeboats, yes, sir.
Do you know from which boats they were taken?
No, sir. I'm only giving you general news now. We took 3 dead men from the boats, and they were brought on board. Another man was brought up, I think he was one of the crew, who died that morning about 10 o'clock, I think. And he, with the other 3, were buried at 4 o'clock in the afternoon.
At sea?
At sea.
Did they have anything on their persons by which they could be identified?
One of my own officers and the Titanic's officers identified the bodies as far as possible and took everything from them that could be of the slightest clue or use. Nothing was left but their clothes. There was very little taken, of course, but as regards details, I cannot give you much. I have been too busy.
You have not the names of these men?
We have the names.
You have not them here with you?
I have not got them with me, no, sir.
Were they men or women?
Men. There were several ladies in the boats. They were slightly injured about the arms and things of that kind, of course. Although I must say, from the very start, all these people behaved magnificently. As each boat came alongside, everyone was calm, and they kept perfectly still in their boats. They were quiet and orderly, and each person came up the ladder or was pulled up in turn as they were told. There was no confusion whatever among the passengers. They behaved magnificently, every one of them. As they came aboard, they were, of course, attended to. My instructions had already been given to that effect.
Captain, how many lifeboats were there?
We had 15 lifeboats with passengers in them.
Of both types?
Wait a moment, please. There were 15 lifeboats alongside. We accounted for those with passengers in them. There was one lifeboat that we saw that was close to the ship, but it had been abandoned because it had gotten damaged and was in sinking condition. The officer had taken all the people out of that lifeboat and left it absolutely vacant. There was no one in it. It was empty.
What type of boat was it?
That was a lifeboat. It had been damaged. We had two Berthon boats.
Collapsible boats?
Hardly collapsible. It's a flat raft boat with collapsible canvas sides, about 2 feet deep.
To hold how many people?
One of those boats would hold 60 to 75 comfortably.
And how many of those were there?
We accounted for two. One of those Berthon boats capsized. That was three.
As the boats were empty and the occupants taken aboard the Carpathia, what was done with the boats?
The boats were kept alongside.
Just in what shape were they left afloat, or were they in some way taken on the decks?
Yes, sir. I'm going to tell you that now. As the people came out, we left the boats alongside. Of course, lots of gear had been knocked out of the boats and thrown out of the way of the people as they were getting up. So while they were holding the service and while I was cruising around, I had had all of my boats swung out, ready for lowering over. And while they were getting all the people aboard from the boats, I got the spare men and some of my officers and swung my boats inboard again and landed them on their blocks and secured them and swung the davits out again and connected the falls again and got up the Titanic's boats. While I was cruising around, I was also getting these boats up. I got seven of the Titanic's boats up in our davits and six up on the forecastle head with the forward derricks. So that is 13 boats in all.
What did you do with these boats?
We pulled them up the davits.
Did you bring them into port?
Yes, and last night, previous to coming into the dock, we got some tenders off and lowered all the boats in the water, and these tenders took them away. Where they took them, I do not know, but we had these boats still left on the forecastle head, and they would have been put into the dock during the day.
Have you examined these boats personally?
I have only been in one or two of them, just looked at them.
Can you tell from what you saw of them whether they were marked Titanic?
They were all marked Titanic as they came up.
Were they apparently new boats?
They were all brand new.
They were all brand new?
Yes. As far as I could see, they appeared to me to be absolutely new boats.
All conforming to the regulations of the British Board of Trade?
Absolutely.
And as good as you would have had if you were to specify them yourself?
Quite.
Did you see any bodies afloat except as you have described?
Only one. No more. No others.
Did you have any information as to whether the passengers or the crew of the Titanic had made use of their life preservers?
I had very little opportunity of being amongst the passengers or any of them. To tell you the truth, I had been on the bridge, or about my duties most of the time. I had, however, one or two conversations with the passengers on Tuesday afternoon. That was the only time I had anything to do with the people, as I heard then that all the people on the Titanic, as far as they could see, had life belts on. They had all been supplied with life belts.
I assume that you kept watch to see whether there was any of these people afloat?
Precisely. I was cruising all around the vicinity of the disaster.
How long did you cruise around there?
In the actual vicinity of the disaster?
Yes.
Half an hour.
During that time, was there a swirl or any unnatural condition of the sea?
Nothing whatsoever. The wind and sea were then beginning to get up. There was a moderate breeze blowing then and a little slop of the sea.
Have you any idea how much depth of water there was about that point?
Yes, about 2,000 and odd fathoms.
2,000 and odd fathoms?
Yes, I looked on the chart.
Have you concluded that you did not see the ill-fated ship at all?
Oh, no. We arrived an hour and a half after she went down, after the last of her was seen.
What was the last message you had from the ship?
Engine room nearly full.
Engine room nearly full?
Yes.
At what hour was that?
That would have been about 1 o'clock. That would be 25 minutes after.
Was that all?
That was the last message we got. It was either engine room nearly full, or engine room filling. The exact words I could not give you. The impression was quite enough for me as to the condition the ship was in.
And you then told them how near you were?
Yes. From the very first, I sent a message to the Titanic telling them, coming immediately to your assistance, expect to arrive at 4:30. No, excuse me, it was expect to arrive in 4 hours, because I had not then got up to full speed.
Did you personally know the captain of the Titanic?
I knew him, yes.
How long had you known him?
I had met him 15 years ago. I have only met him about 3 times altogether.
In your company, who is the master of a ship at sea?
The captain.
In absolute control?
In absolute control, legal and otherwise. No one can interfere.
I suppose if this had not been so, you would not have felt it proper to have gone off your course quite so far.
Quite so.
Are there prescribed routes at sea that are so defined or in their character as to be well understood by mariners?
They are. I may state this, that the position given to me by the Titanic was absolutely correct, and she was absolutely on her track, bound for New York.
What would you call the course, Captain, that the Titanic was taking for New York, as to whether it would be northerly or southerly?
Oh, she was then... I forget the true course now, but she had passed what we call the corner on the Great Circle. It is some years since I was in the North Atlantic trade. I have been in the Mediterranean trade, and I have forgotten. He is not speaking of your compass course. Yes, I'm giving the true course. He is asking whether the Titanic was on the northerly course or the southerly route. Oh, he was on the southerly route.
What do you mean by that?
He makes a great circle on the most southerly route to avoid all ice as nearly as possible. That is 42 north and 47 west. That is what we call the first corner. That is the great circle track from Queenstown down to the corner. From there, he takes a straight course. I forget now the actual course.
Do you regard the route he was taking as entirely practical and appropriate at this time of year?
Oh, quite so. This is most exceptional.
Have the warnings that icebergs were in the vicinity, could he, under those circumstances, have changed his course somewhat to avoid them?
That is impossible for me to tell. All I know is that he was on the track of the westernbound steamers, on his proper track where he ought to have been.
At this time of year?
At this time of year.
Is that not the shortest route from Liverpool to New York?
No, it is the longest.
The longest?
Yes, sir.
What would have been the shortest?
The shortest route is after August, if I remember right, from September to January. From September to January, I think, is the shortest route.
But what would that be?
Oh, well, up north.
How far north?
It would probably be a couple hundred miles north.
Would you regard the course taken by the Titanic in this trip as appropriate and safe and wise at this time of the year?
Quite so.
What would be a safe, reasonable speed for a vessel of that size on such a course and in proximity of icebergs?
Of course, I do not know the ship. I know absolutely nothing about her.
How would you have felt yourself about it? Suppose you had been taking that course with your ship. How fast would you have felt it prudent to go in such a situation?
I can only tell you this, gentlemen. I knew there was ice about.
How did you know it?
From the Titanic.
From the Titanic's message?
Precisely. He told me he had struck ice.
Did you know it any other way?
No, sir. That was the first intimation I had that there was ice there.
You did not know it until you saw it yourself?
I knew the Titanic had struck ice. Therefore, I was prepared to be in the vicinity of ice when I was getting near him, because if he had struck a berg and I was going to his position, then I knew very well that there must be ice about. I went full speed.
You went full speed?
I did, and I doubled my lookouts and took extra precautions and exerted extra vigilance. Every possible care was taken. We were all on high alert.
You had a smaller ship, however, and it would respond more readily to a signal?
No.
Would it not?
No, sir, it would not. I did not maintain that, not for one moment.
How many men were on the bridge, on the lookout, so to speak, in that situation on your ship?
There were 3 officers with me, a quartermaster, 1 man in the crow's nest, and 2 men in the eyes of the ship. that is right forward on the deck, nearer to the water than the crow's nest.
Was that the ordinary compliment, or did you put them there because of that danger?
I put an extra lookout on forward.
An extra lookout?
Yes, and the officer came up extra with me. I had another officer up with me extra. He came up voluntarily.
What would be the ordinary compliment?
The ordinary compliment of a night lookout is two men. We keep one in the crow's nest and one in the eyes. That is, right forward.
Was there any special suffering of the Titanic's passengers after they got aboard the Carpathia?
I never heard of anything special. I cannot give you any medical reports, as I have not received them yet. All I know is that the second day, Tuesday morning, the doctor came to me and said he was pleased to say there was an entirely clean bill of health.
No damage, so far as you know, was done by one to the other, and there was no trouble or difficulty?
No. No, none whatsoever. I never heard anything of that kind, never.
How many lifeboats do you carry on the Carpathia?
We carry 20.
What is their capacity?
I'm not prepared to say at the present moment. I cannot say. I really forget.
Do you carry 20 in obedience to certain regulations of the British Board of Trade?
I think it is 20, yes.
What is your gross tonnage?
13,600 tons.
That is the total capacity of your ship, the tonnage?
13,600.
What is it as to passengers?
I cannot tell you. I have not come here with any data. I have not looked up anything and was absolutely unprepared for any questions. I've been too busy.
What did you say was the tonnage of your ship?
13,600 tons.
What was the tonnage of the Titanic?
It was 45,629 tons.
Are these regulations of the British Board of Trade new regulations or old regulations?
They are of recent date.
The fact that under these regulations you are obliged to carry 20 lifeboats, and the Titanic was only obliged to carry 20 with her additional tonnage, indicates either that these regulations were prescribed long ago...
No, sir. It has nothing to do with that. What it has to do with is the ship itself. The ships are built nowadays to be practically unsinkable, and each ship is supposed to be a lifeboat in itself. The boats are merely supposed to be put on as a standby. The ships are supposed to be built, and the naval architects say they are, unsinkable under certain conditions. What the exact conditions are, I do not know, as to whether it is with alternate compartments full or what it may be. That is why in our ship we carry more lifeboats, for the simple reason that we are built differently from the Titanic, differently constructed.
Approximately how many passengers are provided for on the Carpathia? I did not ask you to be accurate about it, but approximately how many?
How many did we approximately provide for on the voyage from New York?
What is your British allowance?
2,200 third and about 250 first and second combined.
That makes 2,450. Give us your crew complement.
Well, that of course varies. We have about 300 aboard now.
How many officers?
6 officers.
You say the captain of a ship is vested ordinarily with absolute control and discretion over the movement of his vessel.
Absolutely. I wish to qualify that, however. By law, the captain of the vessel has absolute control. But suppose we get orders from the owners of the vessel to do a certain thing, and we do not carry it out. The only thing is then that we are liable to dismissal. I shall give you an illustration of what I mean by that, as regards to receiving orders and so on. When I turned back to New York, I sent my message to the Cunard Company telling them that I was proceeding to New York unless otherwise ordered. You see what I mean there? I said, for many considerations, consider New York most advisable.
And you immediately reversed your course?
I came right around for New York immediately and returned to New York. Would you like to know my reasons for coming back to New York?
Yes.
The first and principal reason was that we had all these women aboard, and I knew they were hysterical and in a bad state. I knew very well also that you would want all the news possible. I knew very well further that if I went to Halifax, we could get them there all right, but I did not know how many of these people were half dead, how many were injured, or how many were really sick, or anything like that. I knew also that if we went to Halifax, we would have the possibility of coming across more ice, and I knew very well what the effect of that could be on people who had had the experience these people had. I knew that that would be the whole time we were in the vicinity of ice. I took that into consideration. I knew very well that if we went to Halifax, it would be a case of railway journey for most of these passengers, as I knew they would have to go to New York, and there would be miseries of that. Furthermore, I did not know what the condition of the weather might be, or what accommodation I could give from Halifax, and that was great consideration, one of the greatest considerations that made me turn back.
And the chances for fine weather were better coming to New York than going to Halifax?
Yes, sir.
Your message to your company was practically notice that you had done this?
I had done it, but the message did not get off till Monday evening.
You were then...
When I sent that message, we had been on our way 12 hours.
Captain, is it customary to take orders from a director or general officer of the company aboard?
No, sir.
From whom do you take orders?
From no one.
Aboard ship.
At sea, immediately... At sea, immediately, I leave port until I arrive at port. The captain is in absolute control and takes orders from no one. I have never known it in our company or any other big company when a board director or managing owner would issue orders on that ship. It matters not who comes on board that ship. They are either passengers or crew. There is no official status and no authority whatever with them.
You say, Captain, that you ran under a full head of steam?
Yes.
Toward the Titanic?
Yes, sir.
Would you have done so in nighttime?
It was in the nighttime. I can confess this much, that if I had known at the time there was so much ice about, I should not, but I was right in it then. I could see the ice. I knew I was perfectly clear. There is one other consideration. Although I was running a risk with my own ship and my own passengers, I also had to consider what I was going for.
To save the life of others?
Yes, I had to consider the lives of others.
You were prompted by your interest in humanity?
Absolutely.
And you took the chance?
It was hardly a chance. Of course it was a chance, but at the same time, I knew quite what I was doing. I considered that I was perfectly free, and that I was doing perfectly right in what I did.
I suppose no criticism has been passed upon you for it?
No.
In fact, I think I may say, for my associates, that your conduct deserves the highest praise.
I thank you, sir.
And we are very grateful to you, Captain, for coming here. I understand it is your purpose to leave this afternoon?
Yes, I think we sail at 4 o'clock.
If we should desire to get into communication again, what are your plans for the future? Are you headed for the south of Europe?
We go to Gibraltar. I'm just going by the same old route as before. Gibraltar, Genoa, Naples, Trieste, Fiume.
50 days back to New York?
A little less than that, about 43 days back. We sail about every 7 weeks.
Did I ask you about the number of passengers that died aboard the ship on your way to New York?
No, sir. None died on the ship, so far as I am aware. We took 3 bodies from the boats already dead, and the fourth man, who died on board from exposure, was taken aboard from the lifeboat. He was a seaman. I am almost sure of my statement that he was a seaman.
In the first lifeboat, you say there was only one man.
No, only one seaman. I think there were 2 more men. To tell the truth, I am not quite sure how many men there were.
Were there any officers?
Just 1 officer.
1 officer and 1 seaman?
And 1 seaman, yes.
How many men?
I cannot tell you. I cannot give you the number of any men or seamen in any of the boats, even approximately now.
These lifeboats, of course, were being propelled by oars?
Yes, sir.
Were there any women using the oars?
There were.
In how many of the boats?
I saw women, I think, in at least 2 boats rowing.
How many women using the oars?
In 1, I saw 2. It's very hard to give the exact number, because 1 or 2 of the boats were rather crowded, especially 1 boat that had got damaged and was foundering. The boat was very crowded. I could not say how many women were pulling. I saw certainly 2 or 3 women pulling at the oars. I know, as a matter of fact, in 1 boat, there were 2 or 3 women pulling.
In what boat did Mr. Ismay come?
I have not the faintest idea. The first I knew that Mr. Ismay was aboard was when we got to the last boat alongside and when we were getting the last passengers aboard.
You do not remember the number of the seamen in that boat?
I have not the faintest idea.
Do you remember the number of men in the other boats?
I can give you no details of the seamen or anything else. Remember one thing. Unless the sailors were dressed in some sort of distinctive uniform, I could not tell the seamen, firemen, stewards, or passengers.
When your ship arrived in New York, were any of the passengers dangerously ill?
Not to my knowledge.
How many did you rescue? Or how many died after you rescued them?
None. No passengers died. Only the 1 seaman.
Do you know who took the lifeboats from the Carpathia?
No.
It was probably done by the owners?
No. I had previously sent a wireless to the White Star Line asking them to send a couple tugboats down to quarantine to take these boats away, as I would not be able to come into dock with these boats up in the davits or in the forecastle head. There were none there, and so I was worrying about these. It was a dirty night coming up the river last night, and I was worrying about what I was going to do with the boats. I had the boats lowered halfway to the water to avoid any waste of time. When we got right off the dock, I asked them to send some tugboats out to take the boats away, and I could not dock until they were gotten out of the way. After that, I do not know anything about them.
Was there any attempt to communicate with the Carpathia from any government vessel?
Yes, from the Chester. I got a message from the Chester. The exact words of it I quite forget now, but there was something in it about the president, something, as far as I remember, about his being anxious about the passengers, if I remember right. I was rather worried at the time, as it was foggy, and these messages came up to me on the bridge. I had my hands full. He gave me his position and told me he was coming to take the names of the passengers and wanted my position. I answered him with my position and asked him if he could take the passengers' names. I told him the names of the first and second cabin passengers, and the crew had already gone. I said, "Can you take the third class names now?" I got a reply back, "Yes, yes."
From the Chester?
From the Chester. Those are the two messages I got from the Chester.
Was there any attempt made by anyone to influence you in sending or receiving wireless messages?
From the very commencement, I took charge of the whole thing and issued orders that every message sent would be sent under my authority, and no message was to be sent unless authorized by me. My orders were, first of all, the two official messages were to the Cunard Co. and the White Star Co. as regards to the accident, telling them that I had got an approximate number of passengers aboard and was returning to New York. That was to the White Star Company, and the other one was to our company, of course, telling them that I was proceeding to New York, unless otherwise ordered, and considered New York to be the best for many considerations. After those two messages were sent, I sent a press message to the Associated Press, practically in the same words as I had sent to the two companies, over my signature. Those were the first three messages that were sent. After these messages were sent, we began sending in the names of the first-class passengers. This was by the Olympic on Monday evening. We got the first, and I think all of the second, off by the Olympic. Then we lost touch.
You lost touch?
We lost touch, yes.
When was that?
The hour I could not tell you. It was Tuesday morning sometime very early in the morning. Between 1 and 2, I think.
How many operators did you have on the Carpathia?
One.
Was he in constant service from the time you received this first message from the Titanic?
He was constantly at his instrument the whole time.
How old a man was he?
He is a young man. I should think about 25 years old.
Under whose employ?
The Marconi Company.
What is his name?
I cannot tell you. I do not know his name.
Did you know, of your own knowledge, of the attempt of the President of the United States to communicate directly with your ship?
Absolutely not. Nothing whatever of that.
I guess that there was no intention whatever of either ignoring his message.
My word, I hope not, sir.
Or neglecting it.
Absolutely no intention of any such thing, sir. It never entered the minds of anyone.
And no one attempted in any way to put a censorship over the wireless service on your ship?
Absolutely no censorship whatever. I controlled the whole thing through my orders. I said I placed the official messages first, after they had gone, and the first press message, then the names of the passengers. After the names of the passengers and crew had been sent, my orders were to send all private messages from the Titanic's passengers first, in the order in which they were given to the purser, no preference to any message.
You picked up a message from the Californian, did you not?
No, we did not pick up a message. excuse me, wait a minute. We knew the Californian was about because the operator had told me he had heard the Californian reply to those signals. That is all. At 8 o'clock in the morning, he hove in sight. This was at the wreck, and I left him when I returned to New York at 8:50, I think it was, when I put on full speed to come back. He was searching the vicinity of the wreckage, and I left for New York. The next day, I got a message from the Californian saying, "Have searched position carefully up to noon and found nothing and seen no bodies."
Did your wireless work right up to the time you intended to use it last?
I do not follow your question, sir.
Did your wireless fail you at all?
Never. The only thing is that we were not fitted up with a long-distance installation. It is only a short-distance outfit for what we call ship messages, close to land stations.
How far can you communicate?
Under good conditions, 200 miles. We only reckon under ordinary conditions on 150 miles. Fog, mist, haze, snow, or any other unfavorable weather conditions make it so that we may not get more than 90 to 100 miles.
It was rather accidental, then, that you happened to be within the radius of your instrument when you got the Titanic.
Yes, we were only 58 miles away from them.
It was providential.
The whole thing was absolutely providential. I will tell you this, that the wireless operator was in his cabin at the time, not on official business at all, but simply listening as he was undressing. He was unlacing his boots at the time. He had this apparatus on his ear, and the message came. That was the whole thing. In 10 minutes, maybe he would have been in bed. Maybe he would not have heard the messages.
It was a very remarkable coincidence.
It was very remarkable, and as I say, the whole thing was providential as regards to our being able to get there.
You could receive from a long distance, but you could not send a response?
We can always take from a long distance, yes.
You have a low-powered machine?
Yes.
From what you saw or have heard from the passenger or crew of the Titanic, do you know whether any of them saw the Titanic sink finally?
Yes. Several of the passengers to whom I have spoken saw the ship sink.
Do you remember who they were?
I think Mrs. Thayer was one.
Mrs. J. B. Thayer?
Yes. And her son Jack and Mrs. Wagner.
And Colonel Gracie?
I do not remember. I do not know the names of any of the people who were saved. I never came across them.
You never talked with them?
I had no opportunity to do so.
You kept very busy?
Yes.
Captain, how many more lifeboats could you accommodate on the Carpathia than you have now?
Under the present conditions, and of course if they were ordinary lifeboats, I do not believe we could take more than 6 at the very outside. Of course, that is absolutely lumbering the deck up as it is.
It would be lumbering the deck up, and you would only have space for 26 in all?
Yes.
And that would lumber up the deck to some extent?
Yes. Not the passenger decks. It has nothing to do with the passenger decks. It would be the deck space that is not utilized by the passengers that would be lumbered up, not the promenade decks.
I see. Would that additional number work much additional inconvenience upon the deck?
No.
Take the case of the Titanic, whose tonnage was more than 3 times as great as that of the Carpathia, which had, I believe, the same number of lifeboats as the Carpathia?
Yes, sir.
How many additional lifeboats could that vessel accommodate without inconvenience?
I have not the faintest idea, sir, what the Titanic was like. I believe she is a sister ship of the Olympic. I have seen the Olympic once when she was at the end of our dock, but I have no idea of her construction. That is all I've seen of her.
Do you think she could accommodate considerably more, do you not?
If she could not accommodate them, she could be made to accommodate them. If they build the ship knowing that she is only to carry 16 lifeboats, they will utilize the space otherwise.
How do you account for the fact that the Board of Trade of England, as the size of these ships has increased, has not compelled an increase in the number of lifeboats? Your maximum, as I understand, is 20 boats, is it not?
Yes, I believe it is, but they have compelled a different construction of the ship itself. That is where the thing has come in.
You regard each ship itself as a lifeboat?
Yes, sir.
That expectation was not realized in the case of this ship.
It has been an abnormal experience as regards the Titanic.
Have you any kind of knowledge at all regarding the force of the impact which wrecked the Titanic?
I know nothing about it, sir. I have not asked any questions about this kind of business. I knew it was not my affair, and I had little desire to make any of the officers feel it any more than they did. Mind you, sir, there is only this. I know nothing, but I have heard rumors of different passengers. Some will say one thing, and some another. I would, therefore, rather say nothing. I do not know anything. From the officers, I know nothing. I could give you silly rumors of passengers, but I know they are not reliable, from my own experience. So if you will excuse me, I would prefer to say nothing.
I think that is all, Captain, and I want to thank you for your courtesy in appearing before the committee and giving us the information at your disposal. As to the equipment of the lifeboats, what are the requirements as to food and compasses and so on?
They are all supplied with compass and with water breakers and bread tanks.
And with mast and sail?
And with mast and sail.
And gear?
And all of the necessary gear.
Do you know whether those conditions were complied with reference to the boats on the Titanic?
As far as I can see, yes. I can tell you this, that I saw myself both water and biscuits in the boat. Not all, of course, but one or two where the men were working about when we secured them. We put them on board our ship, and we had to secure them, and under certain circumstances, we had to come up against the boat and look into them. And there were two or three boats where I did see both water and bread in the boats, and all of those boats had bread tanks. That I know for certain. And they also had water beakers.
We're very much obliged to you, Captain Rostron.
You are quite welcome, sir. If there's anything further I can do, I shall be very glad.
After the recess, I should like to have Mr. Marconi appear before us for a few minutes.
I shall be very glad to do so, Senator.
And the operator?
He will be here by 3 o'clock, Senator.
That is the operator from the Carpathia, also the operator from the Titanic.
He is not able to come. I am afraid the committee will have to go to him. Both his ankles and back are injured, although the last 2 days he was carried up in the Marconi operating room of the Carpathia to assist our operator all he could. Mr. Chairman, I want to make a brief statement. A statement has been made in the press with reference to myself, concerning which I wish to say this. I received this telegram. Huntington, West Virginia, James A. Hughes. You are quoted in the press reports declaring, following Mr. Smith's story, that Ismay should be lynched. Please wire us. Delay press rate collect, 500 words, your view of the Titanic disaster. The Advertiser. To that, I have sent this in reply. Huntington Advertiser. Huntington, West Virginia press reports untrue. My daughter said nothing that would bring any such statement from me. I may have said, if investigation showed neglect of any officer, no punishment was too severe for him. Ismay was somewhat criticized by some for being among the men who were rescued. My daughter had no criticism of him. The press report will give full information as to details. Ismay gave what Senate committee considered a fair statement before the committee. He is subject to further call from the Senate committee. Captain of the Carpathia before the Senate committee testifying now. My daughter states all possible aid was given to them by Captain on Carpathia and officers of the Carpathia.
We will take a recess until 3 o'clock this afternoon.
Whew, that was a little bit of, or a lot of technical reading for me on that one, but it was still really interesting.
Yeah, and he was so prepared.
Yeah, I'm really impressed that he brought his sheet with him.
Oh, that was such a funny...
Yeah, I mean, it must feel weird, though, to know that you're going right from this harrowing experience to a courthouse. So I would be the same way. Yeah, you want it? I'm going to write it down for you. Yeah.
And they're also proper. Like, you can very much tell it's in a courthouse.
And also not of this era, too. Some of the lingo they use.
And the politeness, yes.
Yeah. Just a note from the readers. We want to thank you guys for listening. And we really value your feedback. So please let us know what you're thinking, either in the comments or at titanictranscripts@gmail.com. Thank you.